when we step into a relationship, it's not the two of us, it's the four of us. As you're in a child, as my inner child. I become the father to your child, you become the father to my inner child. So at times we have to step into parental roles, lover roles, essence, you know, soulmates, whatever, you know. And so we need to have more flexibility around polarity teachings to include and subsume and offer this deeper kind of perspective and this deeper lens, which...
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Deeper Podcast, a podcast for all of you who want more. More out of yourself, your relationships, your intimacy, and life. My name is Sophie Josefina, and I'm here to bring you deeper. I'm a sex, life, and relating coach, and I'm fascinated by all things masculine and feminine and bringing the two back together, helping people connect on a deep and real level so we can show up for each other, partner with each other in our healing, and call each other back into our power. A very important part of that for me is honoring both sides, the masculine and the feminine, creating more understanding, more compassion, and respect for each unique experience. And so in this series, I'm speaking specifically to men to honor them, to hear their perspective and how they go through relating the feminine life. Because so often we have demonized and devalued men in their experiences, needs, and struggles. And I want to change that. So I hereby welcome you to my Deeper Into Him podcast series. And before we get started for all these conversations, I want to give a bit of a disclaimer because I realize that this conversation about men and women, masculine and feminine, can sound both heteronormative and gendered. Bear with me. Masculine-feminine dynamics play it out in every relationship. So when we speak about men towards women, I hope you can hear it as being the partner who's more in their masculine and the partner who's more in their feminine, and this very often has little to do with gender. In addition to that, I do want to acknowledge that men and women have completely different societal expectations in the world, and because of that, different lenses. For instance, we tell men they should man up and women they should smile more. In that sense, some of this might be gendered, but I hope for people outside of that binary perspective that they might still feel some truth in any of these stories. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Deeper Podcast. And I am so excited for today's episode because today I am joined by Igor, and I'm going to pronounce his name last name correctly, Vasilevitsky. Is it correct?
Spot yeah. on.
Okay, yeah. Great. And as I said, I'm so excited he's here. I've been reading his work on social media, honestly, for years, and each post has just blown me open. This is somebody who understands depth and nuance like not a lot of people do. Igor is a lot of things, but I'm going to summarize him as this. He is a psychotherapist, a spiritual maturity mentor, a writer, and a speaker. He has focused a lot of his work on sacred intimacy and relationship and polarity. And I'm just so honored that he's here and to hear what his perspective is on all these beautiful topics. So welcome, Igor.
Thank you for having me on.
So happy here. So for people who may not know you, do you want to share just a little bit on what your journey's been like or what you're building in the world?
Yeah, sure. So I started in IT and I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I just went with where the money was at the time. And then I was really deeply miserable in that. So I quit that and I kind of just traveled and tried to learn a little bit about myself. And just found that I was just naturally gravitating towards helping people and understanding the psyche. Did a lot of different studies and then just started my own practice. And I've been doing that for about 18, 19 years now. So yeah. And then the writing came and the writing's something that I'm really passionate about. So yeah, it's mainly the writing and occasionally speaking gigs and stuff like that. But yeah, primarily I just see individuals one-on-one or couples at the moment.
Yeah. It's interesting. I also come from a background of IT and tech and came into this world. I see so many people that have kind of moved from this like hyper masculine into wanting to help and serve. Yeah. Let's go right straight to it. I know you're somebody who's brought so much nuance to polarity, to relating, to like anxious avoidant attachments. What do you think is the biggest misconception that we now have in polarity?
because there's a lot of people, you know, regurgitating the data books and just saying like, this is how it should be. What do you see is kind of the biggest misconception that people are walking around with?
The biggest misconception? I think, but maybe just what I see is being taught there in Polarity is being really extremist, I would say, in terms of, you know, it's like, well, this is how the masculine is, and therefore the man should be this way, and this is how the feminine is, and this is how she should be in order to create polarity. And while the dynamics between the masculine and the feminine on the level of essence of masculine and feminine essence is how it's often described, there's also the human, right, in a way. So it's not that my masculine is just interacting with your feminine. It's also my ego, my personality, interacting with your personality. And that's full of different flaws and incongruencies and faults. And we need to take that into account. So, you know, I see a lot of people then doing these courses and they come out and they're just so militant with themselves and trying to be masculine, trying to be feminine. And, you know, there isn't a lot of space for the human foibles in between. That's kind of where I see there's not enough nuance and depth and breadth to the whole subject.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I see it. I work a lot with women and I see it so much with the impatience in women. And the moment a man or a masculine holder wavers or, you know, checks his phone or scratches his nose or whatever it is, the moment he wavers, they collapse. And it's like, screw you, you dropped.
That's it. That's it. You're not holding me. You went to the bathroom. Now I'm an emotional mess. I get it.
So that impatience to me is always a sign of the more healing gets to be done, because now it's a demand, like it has to happen now. Whenever there's like urgency and demand, it feels like it's coming from a wound rather than from the spaciousness of let's play.
And you know, so certain hard and fast rules that are put in place to prevent certain realities of life that are not that pretty. It's like, you know, never turn into the mother for him, that's going to depolarize the relationship. Well, the truth is that we're all always going to, you know, as one person who I really thought was really wise told me once, you know, it's when we step into a relationship, it's not the two of us, it's the four of us. As you're in a child, as my inner child, I become the father to your child, you become the father to my inner child. So at times we have to step into parental roles, lover roles, essence, you know, soulmates, whatever, you know. And so we need to have more flexibility around polarity teachings to include and subsume and offer this deeper kind of perspective and this deeper lens, which ultimately creates a more flexible, a more allowing, a more permitting, a more patient, to use your term, container to navigate relationships through. Otherwise, we dogmatize it, right? We dogmatize polarity, just as previous ages religion was, you know, deeper truths taken by the ego and narrowed down to just this and nothing else. So which is what you're describing.
Do you think there's something that men are militant about towards women? Because I can give you a list of examples of how women do this, but do you see that from men as well, of like, she wasn't expressing, or she wasn't this, or she wasn't that?
I do see it. You know, I mean, my experience is a lot more women doing this kind of work. So I certainly see it more from the other side. But I do see men go into that too, and certainly try to hold to the letter of every single word in polarity and hold the other person accountable to it. And also just spiritualizing it and using it to gaslight, you know, in both directions, which is difficult to step away from, because spiritual teachings are easily appropriated by trauma to get needs met. And to, you know, for example, just the perfectionist thing goes from materialism to spiritualism. So now I'm going to whip myself to be the perfect, deeper, sacred masculine, you know, instead of to achieve the promotion at work. So I see a lot of that. I certainly will help a lot of people with deconditioning spiritual indoctrination. Yeah.
What would gaslighting look like? So if somebody's listening to this and like, oh, wait, am I doing that? Or is my partner doing that? What would gaslighting with these spiritual concepts, what could that look like?
Trying to think of an example right now. So, for example, you know, let's say honesty, right? I made a post about this today. So we're talking about honesty from, we need to have transparency. We need to be honest. It's the most important thing in relationships. Right. So we can, you know, and then the feminine, who is by nature implicit rather than explicit, mm-hmm. will imply certain things. And she actually yearns for the masculine to kind of pick up on that, to attune his radio station to that. But for men who don't, they may say, well, you're trying to make me read your mind. I'm not a mind reader. We agreed on honesty. We practiced honesty in nonviolent communication. You need to express your needs. So a lot of polarity teachings are very much about the feminine needs to express. Well, I think she sometimes she expresses and often she implies. And it's up to him to tap into that and speak into that, right? So a man can certainly use that doctrine of honest, transparent, authentic communication to gaslight her against her nature, which is to actually suggest or to feel and intuit, and for him to then pick up on that and articulate into the container.
Yeah, I recognize this. This is literally the discussion a partner and I had yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I'm laughing. But because it is this, it's, I think when the feminine is expressing, it's so in the moment that in that moment, it might be about the coffee cup. But actually, I want to be felt deeper. I don't want him to respond to the coffee cup. I want him to feel the pain that's underneath that and to fill it in with words that I can't even find.
Yeah.
So it is implicit. Yeah. In that moment, I might look very explicit, but I'm not.
Yeah. Because it is for the masculine is all about clarity and structure and definition. Right? So the feminine's more about, well, there's something intangible here that I'm experiencing, and so she might talk about the coffee cup, but she's talking about something else, right?
Yeah.
And so a man in his masculine who will attune to that would take great delight in kind of going, oh, I can tell, and then he'll pinpoint what it is going on. He brings clarity to her, which is what she's after. She's after his clarity, and then she can trust him too. Oh, he got me in that moment. I trust him to get me into the next moment, or 20 years down the track. I know that he can pick up on what I don't even know exactly what it is. Now, we're talking about, again, essence relating, feminine to masculine. Of course, you would have both masculine and feminine, so would I, and at different times would take turns playing that game. But, you know, because the conversation's about masculine and feminine, we're talking about the dynamic between the essences rather than the individual people.
I saw you wrote something about this, and I'm so curious on your perspective, because one of the big, I think, fallacies in polarity is that the masculine can't be vulnerable because that flips it. I'm very curious about your perspective, and then I'll share mine. How do you see that? Because that can't be true.
Well, it's like, well, if that were true, then the masculine, I mean, when you say masculine can't be vulnerable, do we talking about the essence of the man?
I think it's often turned into a man can't be vulnerable because then she will lose attraction to him, because if he shows his heart, she will
that's right.
feel like she has to be put into the mother or into the masculine herself.
And that's right.
And a lot of women will feel very resentful that they even have to. That's what I see happening a lot. What's your take
on that? This is the problem, right? It's like translating the essence into the actual person. Right? Because we have both. So I have a feminine and I have a masculine. And then, of course, I'm going to access my vulnerability. If I was pure masculine, the pure masculine is, you know, completely goal-oriented, completely all about achieving certain things. Mm-hmm. There's no feeling at all in the pure masculine essence. But in the person, of course, there is, because there is a dimension of the feminine essence in him. Now, the feminine is vulnerability, is emotion, mm-hmm. is feeling, is eros. So a man does need to access that place. Otherwise, he'll never have softness. He'll never have heart. He would have never have looked into the feminine within himself. That's very difficult to offer that to a woman if he doesn't have that, right? So if the argument then becomes from those polarity teachers that, well, yes, maybe a man has both, but he shouldn't be accessing his feminine in the relationship, not to depolarize it. Well, in that case, where exactly is he meant to do that? Is he meant to go outside and look for female confidants and open up there? Because I would argue that's leaking, as leakage is. Or is he only meant to contain that and only see a therapist once a week for an hour where he's allowed? He's given permission to finally actually access his feelings and try to work through something. You know, to me, it's really highly dogmatic. So what if in the moment we lose polarity? Yes. And why can't we generate polarity that I go into my feminine for a moment and you do step into your masculine? Yeah. You know, there's a bit more. Yeah, I feel like there's more nuance to it, you know, than what you suggested, you know, that sometimes is taught.
Yeah, so the nuance I see is that I could feel it in my partner when the vulnerability is coming from his little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And not to judge it, not to say that that's wrong and he's not allowed to go there, but I could feel that very specifically. And when it comes from a more integrated, more mature place, when it comes from the little boy, I have to work very hard to not go into the mom and not be resentful. And I have to work very hard to keep my heart open and to just be kind and graceful. Mm-hmm. But when he comes from the mature place, I notice I could still take a more feminine approach and let him lead the conversation, let him lead his process, let him lead where he wants mm-hmm. to take it next. And mm-hmm. then I do feel like I'm somewhat of a container, but it's still deeply feminine because I'm not containing him. I'm just mm-hmm. witnessing him. So that's more from my lived experience. Those two feel very different, but the first one isn't wrong.
Mm.
Of course that happens in relationship. Of course your inner child comes up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you're pointing to there, though, is a distinction between a vulnerability that isn't, let's say, that intense, that the owner of the vulnerability can hold it themselves to a degree, let's say, as opposed to a regression, you know, and that happens to a lot of people. That happens to all of us, that we actually become, you know, that inner child. And to me, there's nothing wrong with the other person stepping in and being able to offer the soothing or the loving. Like, it may not be as natural, let's say, to do the holding for somebody deeply feminine, but certainly the soothing, the understanding, the empathy can do a lot of healing in that moment. And again, why can't that be part of a relational container? Why can't then the intimacy deepen now between different aspects and dimensions within us? Now we've met each other's children. Now we've given something to each other's children. Now we're not just masculine and feminine and polarity dynamics. Now we're human beings with multiple dimensions, knowing each other.
Where to use the boundary then? Because I fully feel what you're talking about, and I agree that there should be space for the inner child and to meet each other in relationship. But I do sense that there's a boundary somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the boundary?
It's uniquely dependent on the individual dynamic. If, let's say, if I keep going into the inner child mm-hmm. and that, let's say, to you is too much to handle, mm-hmm. and you're feeling more in a therapist role, more in another role, in a mother role or whatever, than you are as a woman, et cetera, et cetera, you know, it's the boundaries there for you, right? So I think it's very deeply unique. And when I work with couples, it's about finding that place. What is okay and what isn't?
I love that you're saying that, because I think a lot of people, when they talk about relationship, they're looking for these objective truths.
Yeah.
Like, couples should never fight, or couples should always, whatever. They look for these like big objective things when actually it's so dependent on each individual and each
it
couple
is. I mean,
creates that together.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to create certain, structure is made of out of absolutisms. It has to be concrete,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But for each couple, it's a different structure. So it's both. It's like, yes, there needs to be fluidity, but there also needs to be some sort of containment and concreteness, right? But it's, again, every couple, you define the container that works for them, and then you renegotiate it when it doesn't.
So a bit related to this, a topic I was always very passionate about was spiritual bypassing. in my previous relationships, I'd been with, let's call it the spiritual man, kind of that archetype, right? Like very studied and very mental and very moral in his in his beliefs. And so I was around a lot of spiritual bypassing in my in my early 20s, and I couldn't give a, what's the word? I didn't know how to stand up to it. I didn't even know how to recognize it. And so I went, my pendulum swung the other way. I got very anti-spiritual bypassing. Anybody that would even do remotely something like that, I'd be like, no, you're bypassing. And now I'm feeling that there's actually a middle road, that the that every spiritual thing has a truth to it. And just saying it's all bypassing is maybe a bypass in itself. And just to give people an example, to me, spiritual bypassing in a relationship is things like, telling your partner when you're in a fight, like, oh no, but this is just your trigger, or you create your reality, or you have chosen for this, or it's all just an illusion and I'm just a reflection of you. And it, to me, it always felt like the other was removing all their responsibility with spiritual concepts. And I found that really hard to even argue, because I didn't know why it was wrong. Now I do, but and I'm sure a lot of people have this when they get into these things, they're like, feels wrong, but they're saying the right thing. So what's up here? So I'm really curious what your take is on spiritual bypassing in general, or how it's sometimes used in relationship, and because I know you have a really nice nuanced look at it.
Yeah, well, you know, what you're talking about is just another form of spiritual gaslighting, at least to some, a couple of the examples that you've brought up there. I guess the nuance that I've just recently, you know, expressed, I think that that's what you're referring to, is the fact that we are always looking for things to hold on to, because facing everything all at once is unreasonable, unmanageable, and undoable, right? To just surrender and drop into through all of our stuff inside. We need to hold on to certain things. So we hold on to whatever stories and whatever cosmology or mythology that we grow up in first, right? And then we discover spirituality, and then we begin to use that to hold on to certain things. So that's this kind of this idea of spiritual bypassing, is to use spirituality to avoid something. Now, avoidance becomes this kind of taboo, demonized, villainized thing in spiritual service, right? Which becomes misanthropic. It becomes anti-human, because the human condition is that we do avoid all the time. We are self-deceitful. It's part of our condition. And while it's very admirable and noble to kind of try to not avoid and face ourselves, there can be a false perfectionism in the nobility of that. You know, I'm going to face everything. So I'm going to destroy all my bypassing and my escapism and my avoidism and my dissociations and my whatever else is, right? So I think, so I think we need to give permission for us, for ourselves and for others to be human and to bypass, for one thing. Now, the other thing is, the other nuance here is that where it can be useful. So let's say somebody who's saying, well, this too shall pass. And you can clearly tell that they're perhaps holding on because they don't want to drop into another layer of grief, right? Now, the spiritual moralists, the sanctimoniouses of that, would be like, no, you're spiritual bypassing, let go of that thing, drop into it. But what if they're holding on to that and they're getting another resource from it, even though it's not a direct experience of this too shall pass, they don't truly connect to it. But what they're getting from that is something like hope. And then hope as a resource comes in and holds their grief and experience. Well, they're not bypassing. They're adding a resource to alchemize and hold an experience that is too hard to hold without that resource. So quite often it's important to understand, you know, and this is I'm talking very psychotherapeutically now, you know, how the dynamics of alchemy and how things shift. We need a container in which, like a vessel in which the ingredients are able to dissolve or to combine to create something, you know. So into pain, we must add something else. And we need to know what that something else is. So when people are holding on to these things, we need to allow and give permission to and an understanding of why are they holding on to it? What are they getting from it? What are they absorbing? Right? So spiritual bypassing as a, again, as an absolute concept for everything, I think is limited. It needs to be broadened and deepened.
So interesting speaking to you, because I, first of all, I love this almost like fighting for the human in somebody. But in my courses, I teach a lot about the masculine lens on the feminine, about how she should be clear, or how she should not be emotional, or how she should be X, Y, Z, right? I'm realizing, listening to you, and it's moving me a little bit, that I've put a feminine lens on the masculine. And I've known, I've always thought, of course, that has to be there, but I've never really been able to catch it. I could feel it now, because when my current partner is also quite a high spiritual, like his energy is more higher up in his body, I would say. And I often think, like, you're just bypassing, you're not feeling, why are you not going in it? Go in it. And I look down at it.
Mm-hmm.
That is my feminine lens on the masculine, because in my feminine body, I'm just like, go feel it, go in it, go deeper, right? Drop in it. Why are you not dropping in it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's my feminine lens on the men.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's like, at the same time, you know, another question that comes up to me is, you know, when, let's say, he's not feeling, when he's not dropped in there, how safe does your feminine feel? How trusting does your feminine feel? Because if it's coming from a place of judgment or spiritual bypassing, it's one thing. But if it's coming from your feminine, knowing that your man in that moment isn't all that you need, your feminine needs him to be, or his masculine has a potential to be deeper, then to yearn for him to feel it in order to be that you need, I would say, is healthy. It's a healthy yearning, not to be shamed or judged. It's a question of then discernment between that and the other. And, you know, and then also having the compassion, you know, from a, forget about the polarity now, coming back to the human, the compassion for when he can't.
Yeah.
And the love when he can't. And the love and the compassion for his struggle for when he can't, you know.
Right.
So when we're, for me, the compassion piece is really huge, because with all the spiritual stuff, what I'm seeing, and a lot of people I see who have been around the spiritual circuits, there's so much, you know, perfectionism and a need to purify and eliminate what makes us human, what makes us human. And so, you know, my progress as well as a healer, therapist, whatever the hell I am, has been about stepping out of that, stepping out of kind of being this shadow hunter or this alchemizer or whatever else, you know, and helping people shift patterns, but actually finding moments of just loving them and suffering with them, which is what compassion means, and really connecting and meeting them where they are, as they are, without attempting to shift them in any direction towards polarity, towards enlightenment, or whatever else. And the type of alchemy and the type of connection, the type of healing that's profound that happens from that place allows them to accept their humanity and to get off that spiritual rat race, to keep healing and to keep shifting, and just allows them to live a normal life. So in a lot of ways, you know, there's not an anti-spiritual thing, but a pro-human thing that I think I'm talking about.
I love that. I always say, like, you're never going to graduate self-development school. So this is never going to finish. You're going to keep doing your shadow hunting, but they'll just keep popping up. Yeah.
And never stop. It's like whack-a-mole.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe it's not about fixing it. It's more about being that it's there.
It's both. It's both. Yeah. At times it's about stepping in and, you know, it's time for it to move and they just need assistance. And at other times it's about giving them permission just to be that, and that's what does the thing, that does the trick. Oh, it's like, oh, okay, I'm allowed to be toxic? Or did I just say something really shameful or dirty, right? Toxic. Normally we try to get away from toxicity in the self-development community, but what about if we give permission to those darker aspects to be held by consciousness rather than eliminated? You know, there's a greater wholeness to that.
I think a lot of women listening to this will recognize, and I recognize it in myself too, of the, I call it almost the shame of every time we lose control of the emotions and they don't come out pretty and they come out messy and we have big responses. I mean, a woman in PMS, I lock myself up when I have PMS because I know the things that come out of me, I will regret deeply and be very ashamed of a few days later. And so I can feel that when you're talking about it, like, wait, we could be accepting about that. It gets to be part of the human experience. And I didn't just like fail at a human level. So yeah, it's beautiful hearing you speak about that because I think this is really hard to do.
Yeah. To be messy. Yeah. It is. It is. And quite frankly, for a man to really let go of all control, there is a similar fear there, a similar terror of appearing crazy, being out of control, being too much, being too big, being too loud, being too whatever, you know. And this is where quite often if I'm working with someone who's coming from that place, I try to create an environment and a space that can hold all of it. Because really that fear is just coming from, at some point, the child was told, shh, you're too loud, you're too big, keep it down, right? Turn it down. And so there's a sense that if we really unrestrict ourselves in our self-expression, we're going to lose love, we're going to lose this, we're going to lose that, we're not going to be safe. And it's really a beautiful feeling when I let someone, when somebody trusts my holding enough to freely let go into that space and to be held and to be met with, you know, presence and holding and empathy and understanding and appreciation. Because normally when that happens, I'm just like, wow, that's awesome. That is so cool. Shows like amazing, right? And to be met with that when it's genuine can be incredibly healing. Oh my God, I'm not too much. All of me is being held right now. All the chaos for which I thought I'd be abandoned, rejected, whatever, you know?
Yeah, I can so feel that. I wanted to just pivot into a topic because I'm just so, so curious on how you see that. I've been kind of thinking a lot about the mother and the father wound in men because I can sense it. I can feel it. They feel different. And I wonder how it translates in relationship.
When you say mother and father wound, which one are you talking about? It sounds like there's maybe you have an understanding of a specific wound or some. To me, as a psychotherapist, I see a lot of different woundings from both father and mother.
Yeah. I think the mother wound, I've seen it or I felt it in a way of not trusting the feminine, of not trusting that she'll be there, of not trusting her expression of that. I think the father wound, there's so many examples, but what I could sense was a lot of men suck, men are dangerous, a rejection of authority, a rejection of being led in any kind of way. And so that's, I think, a little bit how it's felt.
So kind of like the wounding with the actual essence, is what I'm hearing. It's like there's a wounding with the father and therefore a wounding with the masculine and therefore, and let's say, a distrust of the leading, not really allowing the holding. So yeah. The masculine, a rejection or a distrust of the masculine aspects leading into that. So, okay, what did you want me to speak into around that?
I think maybe my question to you is when you feel this in relationship, you feel that your man is sitting with this either really big mother or father wound, what is our role as the feminine in that? What's the role as the partner in that? How can we support that? How can we... what's our role in that?
So let's say, just so I'm clear, your partner is clearly in a wound towards the feminine while in relationship to you.
For instance.
And let's say is lashing out at your offers of empathy because maybe it was given with conditions in childhood or something like
that. Right. So make it even more general. What do we do in relationship when we feel that our partners are bringing these really deep childhood woundings that are translating into this polarity relationship of distrusting the other energy? How do we hold that when it's this really deep early childhood stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's more my question.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends, I think, on, again, the uniqueness. So your unique composition of your energetic field and your essence will dictate your ability and your capacity to hold something like that. Now, what's important to mention is that the masculine fights his demons by fighting them. Yeah. You know, this isn't spoken a hell of a lot about, actually, in the teachings at the moment. It's all about, there's a lot of feminine teachings, right? Surrender, opening, flow, let go, rest, which are all perfectly beautifully valid, but they're all feminine attributes of healing. There's also the masculine, right? And the masculine conquers, yeah, right? It's challenging. It's the challenging of certain aspects within your psyche by overcoming them, archetypally speaking, through battle on the battlefield in order to usurp the tyrant and ascend to the throne as king. It doesn't get there through softness and love. It gets there through struggle and fight and challenge. So if a man is wounded and he acts out in a natural thing to him, which is perhaps lashing out, perhaps barking at you, perhaps sniping, perhaps the energy of anger, rage, or even violence rises within him, I would argue that's not really, you know, the place for the feminine to kind of step in and to try and help him, because she can get hurt, and that often happens, yeah, right? She gets wounded as part of that. And so that's maybe a piece better for him to seek elsewhere to heal with another man, with groups of people, or with a therapist female who is able to meet that with a strong enough masculine energy that challenges that aggression, let's say, but in a healthy way, and alchemizes it in the process, meets it where it hasn't been met before, where it's been shamed before, or whatever else, you know. So it's so depends. But at the same time, if the man just drops into inner child vulnerability, he's not kind of lashing out, let's say, and he's literally, you know, a five-year-old sitting there, mm-hmm, yearning for softness, nurturance, love, and you feel that yearning, you feel that compassion towards him, like, beautiful, give that to him. That's going to be a healing, tremendously healing moment, and then the child can integrate into the adult. Yeah.
I do recognize something about what you're saying here. I read a book once that said, that it was called, I think, How Men Heal. Mm-hmm. It's an older book, but it says this beautiful like comparison that women heal in connection, sitting in front of each other with eye contact, and men heal shoulder to shoulder, kind of just doing something together, right? Getting something done together, drinking the beer together on the bar stools. And it's always inspired me because my own instinct, and I think of a lot of women, is to go like, literally like staring at him, like, tell me what you're feeling. I'm here. And most men will go,
Yeah. That's right. So there's a lot to be said about, you know, dynamics of healing, the dynamics of the psyche, and then how to bring that into relationship. Yeah. There's a lot of nuance. And with the couples that I work with, it's about finding their specific dynamic and which roles are they playing, you know, which spaces are they traversing? How do you help them navigate it, you know? But ultimately also the polarity stuff, there's this sacred level of relating, which I absolutely love to work in, you know, and it's very mythological and archetypal. But if we look deep down into our essences, we'll see that they're quite true. But they sound, you know, a lot of them sound very Disney-ish. You know, there's certain aspects within us that the feminine desires.
Yeah.
A foreverness. Or both the masculine and the feminine desire the one at a deep enough level. Now, when the ego gets a hold of it, yeah, you're right, you know, that doesn't work. But at a deeper level, let's say the feminine does want to be chosen, does want to feel that the man is choosing her forever, not for 5 or 10 years, because that gives her the safety to open. And she also wants to know, she wants to feel that he's got those eyes only for her. Otherwise, the energy leaks elsewhere. So working at this level is very interesting because we're getting into sort of archetypal mythological spaces. And when one person in the relationship is there and the other one is not quite, it's an interesting dynamic to work with.
Yeah, it's so inspiring to hear you speak about this. I often give the example of my partner. He, from day one, just said, "I choose you." And that doesn't mean that practically I think we're going to be together our whole lives. I don't know. Life can happen. That's not even a question. But I can feel his whole energy body, like his whole gaze is on me.
Yeah.
And his intention is always to be my like life partner.
Yeah.
And shit happens. And he isn't always that, of course, because he's human and life gets in the way. But it's that intentionality in that I could feel that as the foundation of everything that he does. That has made me relax from day one. It was just like, well, this man has chosen me.
Beautiful.
So clear. I can so feel that. And it's not in words. It's not a promise. It's not.
Yeah.
He can't promise me he's going to be with me my whole life because he can't. Nobody can. Right.
So, yeah.
But it's an energetic shift. You're right. It was just like, boof, there he was.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. The archetypical dance. Can you give him another example of that? Because I think it's so beautiful. This sacred, like how do you work with people with that?
Well, it's about just gauging if the person's ready to meet their partner in that. And sometimes they cannot drop down to that level, that depth. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're still working stuff out on their emotional, the energetic kind of, let's say, more shallow surfaces of consciousness, not less than or not worse, just not shallow, because the sacred is at the level of the soul, really. That's where all the blueprints of all these stories of knights and kings and queens and all these archetypes actually play out. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes I'll be working with someone where I can feel an ancestral, let's say, resistance to womanhood, for example. And when that shifts in the session, I can feel, and they can feel quite tangibly, this stream of archetypes coming through. Of the queen, of all these sort of things that has been blocked, let's say, in the mother's lineage. So, you know, it arises quite intuitively. I never know what's going to happen, but the sacred space just tends to come up at different moments where it's like, oh, that's an invitation to go there. That's an invitation to actually play with an archetype. That's an invitation to explore the warrior, let's say. For a really meek and passive person. And what happens when we work with the warrior symbol? What does that evoke from their blueprint, from their soul? So not kind of trying to chisel your way down. What's the trauma that stopped you from being assertive? But rather, let's go to the soul. Let's go to the archetype. Let's go to what's already sitting there. Let's speak to that. Let's see what stirs inside of you. And then activates and ripples through your psyche, changing your nervous system to include such things as assertiveness and strength and protection, etc., etc.
So interesting, because you're really inspiring me here. Me and my partner usually talk about this, that we're trying out all these different versions of a light sub-dom relationship, and that's not the right word. Because it doesn't feel like sub-dom, but it does feel like this. It does feel like the warrior and the maiden.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a lighter archetype combination, and sometimes it's a darker archetype combination. And it's not that, like, it's not sub-dom, but that's the only words I have for it. And now
yeah.
You're talking about this, I'm like, that's what it feels like. We sometimes intentionally for a week will go into an exchange that is a bit more like the king and the courtesan or whatever. And play with those energies of just being in really, really clear polarity and about like protection. Like sometimes I just really need to feel protected. Sometimes I really need to feel ravished. Sometimes I need to feel really chosen. Are they different?
Yeah. Yeah. And the more breadth and depth that you have in access to these deeper energies, the more that you can meet each other's needs in that. And it's beautiful when two people are at the same level because they can play at that level. It's more difficult when one's here and the other one's there. But, you know, sometimes a couple will be like, they met and they had children, so they had to become king, queen straight away. They missed the romancing phase of the knight and the maiden. Right. So it's about introducing that as an archetypal game for them to play and access those energies in the relationship.
That's beautiful. That's really inspiring. Mm. I want to ask you one last thing. There was one post that you wrote that completely got to me. It was, you said, the woman that loses herself in a relationship is not held firmly and safely enough by the man. Can you share more about that?
Yeah. Well, to clarify, let's say a very, very, very feminine woman without a hell of a lot of masculine that's not holding herself can lose herself, as you know, often we hear, I lost myself in that relationship. Also with men, it also works the other way. I lost my sense of self, my identity.
Especially if you're more anxiously attached.
Yeah. I had to take a pause because I kind of struggle a little bit with that terminology and that framework in general.
Yeah.
Possibly. So, I mean, I come from a different lens, I suppose, of more like structure or structurelessness. And so when...
That sounds nicer. That sounds a lot nicer.
Yeah. I mean, that's just been my experience in terms of building my own structure around my feminine. I mean, I've come more from a much more heavily conditioned feminine kind of upbringing. Mm-hmm. And so I had to kind of erect my masculine. I had to find that. I had to evoke that to hold my feminine. Because before that, I was, as you know, a lot of people are, quite leaky in a lot of ways in relationships, just on my own, because I didn't have a strong structure and container around my feminine within my psyche. I literally did not have these strong, firm boundaries holding all my emotionality and moods and thoughts and whatever else. And so
what
I was
look like,
what did what look like?
What would that look like in somebody if they, for instance, in a man, when they don't have these structures around their inner feminine?
Oh, they may be philanderers, either, you know, sort of adulterers, maybe in mind with porn or in reality, the energy leaks out. You know, a masculine that's really contained and has chosen someone to claim, channels all his Eros energy in a penetrative way directly towards his woman when he's with her or when he isn't, right? So, yeah, coming back to the post, you know, a woman or a man can lose themselves in a relationship where when either they don't have their own container or if the other person doesn't have a strong enough container and boundaries to hold themselves and to offer that to the other person. So it's possible for me to be with a woman and to offer my structure and containment to her. But if I don't have it, we're kind of enmeshed. We're engulfed. We're just swimming in each other, which is a lovely cuddle puddle, energetically speaking. But, well, then we're confused. Where do I end? Where do you begin? What's my thought? What's your thought? Where do you stand? Where do I stand? What are my needs? What are your needs? We're just kind of this homogenized kind of being. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I initially thought, oh yeah, I can feel that if you would be in a relationship with, for instance, somebody with a bit of a wandering eye or like the artist archetype, I can so feel that I would lose myself in a relationship like that because they're everywhere. They're all over the place. So you constantly have to stay alert. And so the boundaries between me and that other person would dissolve. So
yeah,
I can feel that in my body that would be a very confusing thing to be in. And the containment or maybe the intentionality of like, I choose to do this now. I think that relaxes a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And the ability to hold the course for that intentionality. Because there's also the type of man or woman, but let's just stick with man for now, that is very good at being very intentional and promising a hell of a lot and being very confident in it, but then not following through on that and then promising something again and again, right? So staying the course is one specific masculine attribute, deeper masculine attribute, holding the intention despite the challenges that arise, right? So there's many different deeper masculine aspects that are quite nuanced and subtle like that, you know. And so some people I work with, men, we kind of need to refine that specifically based on their psychic composition. What aspect are they able to offer, and which ones, and why can't they with others, you know?
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I think we have covered so many things, and there's so much depth in this and so much to process also. Where can people find out more about you? And is there anything you're offering right now if people would like to work with you? Because I think you're offering such a deeper understanding of these things and a more therapeutic way of using polarity and using this that I think is so beneficial. So where can people find out more about you?
So hopefully you can post a link there. They can follow me on Facebook and see my writings, because that's primarily where I write at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then they can just get in touch with me if they're interested in my offerings. I do offer a structured program called Structured, which is actually all about building structure within the psyche, right? So evoking the deeper masculine within men and women. So bringing such things as holding and containment and sealing the leaks in their fields, giving them that sense of steadfastness and, you know, consistency and commitment energetically within their own field. So there's that program, but also work one-on-one therapeutically, various kind of different offerings there, either single sessions or longer kind of containers. So if you can maybe share also my email address, people can get in touch with me that way.
Yeah, I will. Well, thank you so, so much for today. I so appreciate all your wisdom and everything, and how you see the world. And I'm truly excited for everybody that's going to find you.
Thank you for that. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to have a chat with you.
Thank you so much, my loves, for listening to another episode of the Deeper Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please pass along to even just one person who needs to hear this. And my love language is very much words of affirmation, so I love, love, love it when you share my work. If there was one sentence that popped out to you from today's episode, please do share it on your social media, tag me in it, and I will shower you with my gratitude. And always, if you want to stay connected, Instagram is the best place. That's where I'm the most active, sophie.josephina, or hop on my mailing list, sophiejosephina.com. And before I forget, all of these conversations, so every podcast episode, is now also available on my YouTube channel, so you can always check it out there.